Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to our show. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, I'm Coach Kelly.
And we are here again. Can you believe it?
No.
Week number four.
I love it. I love it. It's my highlight of the week.
Last week, it was pouring rain.
Oh, yes.
And now we're back to normal. It's 82 degrees. Oh, my goodness. For those of you who do not have the pleasure of being in Southern California, as we do right now, our weather is amazing.
It's ridiculous. It really is.
So, how was your week?
The week was pretty good, uneventful, which I guess no news is good news. No crisis, no craziness. What about you?
A little too much for me.
I should have taken some of yours. Yeah. Maybe mine was boring.
Take part of it. Actually, it was wonderful, but it's now going on 2 full weeks in a row of event after event after event. So I'm looking forward to this next weekend with a day to just rest
and down. Absolutely. Okay, so if you had like your perfect day of what you could do, what would that look like for you?
Get up, take a walk. Uh-huh. I love to walk, especially when it's nice weather. Or even if it's raining, I don't mind. I just really like to be outside. Mm-hmm. Kind of sets the mood for the day.
Sure.
And have a good homemade breakfast.
Yes.
I'll make really good omelets.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, with egg whites, actually. Uh-huh. And then just kind of hang out. Maybe go see a movie.
Yes, that's my thing.
Read. Uh-huh. Just chill. You know, sometimes, I think we talked about this before, I am an extrovert by nature.
Yeah.
But I really have finding as I get older that I really do regenerate my energy by closing up a little bit and just going more to myself. So it's kind of mixed.
Well, it makes sense. You're giving a lot to your patients. And so it's like you kind of need that space to sort of, you know, give back to yourself. I get it.
What is your perfect day?
I kind of like yours. I would take yours.
I'll take the kids for you. Yeah, you can have my day.
That is the start of the perfect day. A little break from the kids. But same sort of thing, like maybe a hike in the morning, definite movie. I feel like that is my escape. I love movies, so I could totally do that. I also love to travel someplace new. Some sort of novelty would be fun, even for like a day trip somewhere, Catalina or some kind of cool little
Which is
place.
Where you just recently
yes,
went. Yes,
exactly, which was so cool because so you feel
adorable.
Like, so for those of you who don't know, Catalina is an island off of California, about an hour. You take a ferry. It's about an hour from Long Beach. And it's just this really cool little island. You feel like you're just in another planet. You kind of forget, you know, that you're in the States. So it was really cool.
And beautiful boats.
Yes,
beautiful boats.
Just a cute little town. It's like a small little town. Everybody knows each other. Like the lady who worked at her hotel, like her sister was like our massage therapist. Like, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody. It's cool. It's a nice little place.
You can bike ride pretty much around the entire island in a half a day.
Yep. They have golf carts.
Yeah.
So a lot of people like that's their like one lady, she had a golf cart and then she had like a car seat in her golf cart. She's like, yeah, this is for me and my baby. Like, that's just how they get around. It was so
wow,
just a different world over there, but just very relaxed too, you know, a good vibe. I like that.
Wonderful. Yes. And for those of you who will not know this, but I'm going to tell you now, Kelly's going to abandon me in 2 weeks for our show. However,
just one time.
Yes. And then we will have a special guest, which we'll announce next week.
It's very cool. I'm excited for the special guest. I hope she's not too good, and then you hire her instead of me.
No, it's okay. It'll be you. But she is awesome. So, let's see. Last week, we talked about relationships. We're kind of opening that up. The most important part of our show for you who are listening is to call us or email us. And our phone is 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. While we certainly aren't saying that this show is a substitute for professional advice or professional help, we are definitely here to answer your questions and to take your calls and to read your emails. And we have several of those today, Kelly. We actually have 4 of them to get through, but we love the live call. So give us a call. Please let us know what's on your mind. More on relationships. Yeah. Last week we said, why don't we talk about what happens when people treat us like crap, right? The not so good relationships. I was thinking that sometimes on my way over to the studio today, I sometimes think that I treat strangers and acquaintances better than I treat the people I love at times.
Absolutely.
It's the people I love where I might take out my bad mood, or I may get grumpy or kind of displace or dispense all the stuff of the day that didn't go so well. And I'm not as thoughtful sometimes of the people I care about the most. And yet I expend all this energy to be really extra kind and nice to other people. Not saying that it's not a good thing to be kind and nice to other people, but I think I may have to tweak that balance sometimes.
Well, because you feel safest with those, you know, your husband, wife, brother, sister. I mean, you know that they're not going to abandon you, so you can kind of, I mean, that's what my kids do. It's like they're, you know, they're typically good with other people, then they unleash it on me because it's like, I'm not going anywhere, unfortunately.
Mama dumpster?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yes. So it makes total sense, but I agree with you. I think we need to put in more, it needs to be reversed. The strangers that we're not going to see again, we don't need to, I mean, yes, we need to be nice, but we don't need to expend all that energy. I think you're right. I think we need to reverse it.
Yeah, I think so. It's really important for us to have a gauge internally about how much energy we're expending in various places and mm-hmm. make sure that we reserve and preserve our love and kindness toward the people who mean the most to us. Because that's
so
what
true.
They deserve.
Yes, 100%.
What do you think it is to say that somebody treats you like crap? Like, what is that? I think it's different for different
people. For
everybody,
people. Like, what do I think of when I hear that?
Yeah.
I think of a relationship where either the man or the woman, they're in a relationship and he just, I want to say, I'll just use he as this reference, but he just doesn't treat her well. Like, he doesn't respect her. He doesn't, you know, he's not a gentleman. He just, you know, maybe there's some verbal abuse. That's kind of where I see it. Like, maybe that's the high extent, but that's kind of what I think of. What about you?
Yeah, I was trying to think about that, too, is what does that really mean? Because I know that there are some days that somebody can talk to me in a certain way, and I'm totally fine with it. You know,
yeah.
Like sarcasm
mm-hmm.
or, you know, flippant remarks. I can roll them off my back and just say, whatever.
Right.
And there's other days when I'm particularly sensitive and somebody says something sarcastic mm-hmm. that I think is hurtful, and that I can just get all ruffled up in a second. So I think it's different at different times, depending on our moods, mm-hmm. How much we've gone through in the day and the week and the month and the year, what's going on in our lives. But definitely, certainly, we're talking about abuse. That would certainly be
yes.
under the umbrella of treating someone like crap.
Right.
But I think also just being insensitive to somebody, if you know somebody well
mm-hmm.
and you actually step on their toes in a way you know that's going to hurt them. You
yes.
know, there's certain things you know if you've
yes.
been friends with somebody for a long time that
pushing
if you say,
buttons.
Yeah, it hurts their yeah. feelings. So that's another version of treating somebody like crap that I think it's worthy for all of us to pay attention
of
to.
Of course.
Trying to not do that because it really can hurt people's feelings. When they say sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me, I think that's a crock, a total crock.
Absolutely. Sometimes I feel like words are worse than
worse?
Like a physical.
Yeah.
I agree.
One big swat, it's like it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Not recommending that, by the way.
Right. But that's what they say about little kids, too. Like, boys tend to just, like, you know, knock it out and they're done. And then, like, the girls, it's sort of like they have those mean words and it's like kind of stays with you longer. It's like a internal pain.
Especially when it's deliberate and pointed at something that you know somebody is trying to hurt you with,
yes.
right?
Yes. Oh, my God. It's the worst. It's horrible. God, yeah. So I 100% agree. But my question to you is when you initially broached the topic, I thought about why do some people accept it? Because I think, I mean, I guess, is it just a certain person who kind of takes the crap? Or is it just that they're too nervous to back away? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know how last week we talked about that our role models in our family is mm-hmm. a significant part of what our template is, so
yes.
to speak, for what we expect in relationships. And I think that a lot of people, if they were mistreated in childhood in various forms, whether it's mm-hmm. parents or siblings or teachers or other kids
yeah.
in the schoolyard, that can have a really significant effect on our concept of what a relationship should look like. So if you had that kind of mistreatment and then that's all you know, then you have established an equilibrium around that kind of behavior. So it's kind of what you expect
sure.
for yourself about how other people will treat you.
Because that's kind of what you're used to or what you're used to be treated like. So it feels normal, I guess, so to speak.
So yeah. It has a lot to do with self-esteem also. right? We have people with very low self-esteem and then people with inflated self-esteem,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
An inflated sense of self-value, which can then cause people in the sort of in the realms of narcissism,
mm-hmm.
to people to behave toward others where they feel superior. They think that their rights are bigger and stronger and more important than somebody else's.
Yes.
And they'll walk on other people's,
mm-hmm.
They'll step on them all over the place just to get their own way.
Is that narcissism as well?
Yeah, that's what I'm, yeah.
Yeah.
Narcissism is that overinflated sense of self-value.
Yes.
That you basically believe that you are better than other people.
Right. Like you internally believe it. That's so amazing to me. Wow. I know a lot of those people.
Do
not fun to be around. No. Very difficult, I think, because it's almost like you almost have to pity them in a way they don't even realize. I mean, it's so scary how they're just in their own little world, their own little reality show, and kind of don't realize what's going on.
And what's always been the scariest part about that is, you know, when you talk to somebody who's capable of empathy,
yes.
and you share with them, wow, that really hurt me. Can mm-hmm. you not do that again? They go, oh, wow, that hurt you. I get it. Okay, mm-hmm. I'll try. I may not be perfect, but I'll try to avoid doing that again. With a narcissist, if you tell them that you are hurt by something they did, they turn it around immediately on you. Well,
oh,
you did such and such.
That's
why you deserve that. So, no, it's not. It's never about, oh, pausing and having
yes.
some compassion or empathy for
uh-huh.
the other person. It's all about what did you just do to me?
Because they can't even look at their part.
They can't. They don't have empathy. They literally don't have any empathy.
Right. That would make the worst therapist on the planet. Oh my
and
God.
Yet so
I was just
many.
Gonna say, I bet you know a bunch. Yeah.
Well, they often end up flocking toward the clinical director positions at things and
uh-huh.
administrative positions because narcissists really they're nourished, I guess, if that, mm-hmm. maybe that's a terrible word for it, but by power.
Yes.
Power and esteem from others. So they mm-hmm. like to find positions where they can be put on a pedestal.
Yes.
Where other people will look up to them.
Unbelievable.
And then they're able to look down upon others.
Yes.
And a lot of therapists have what I call technical or pseudo-empathy, which
okay.
is not the same as real empathy. It's like trained empathy.
Oh,
if I learn to say these words correctly, mm-hmm. I'm going to win favor with that person. And it's used as a manipulation.
Oh, my God.
So it's
scary.
Actually a very frightening,
yeah,
frightening prospect.
Oh, my God. Well, make sure that you get a good recommendation for a therapist. I think that's what we've learned.
Yes.
On this. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So who's the... Who in your life has been the worst person on the planet to you?
God, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
Oh, God. You know, I've actually had a lot of professors in grad school that I just had a really hard time with. I mean, there was one who was a social worker who just really had an issue with me. And I just was treated so poorly by this man. And it was just, I mean, when I think of somebody who really kind of wronged me, he comes to mind. It was really difficult. That was a tough time because it was like kind of same sort of situation where a man in a superior position where I kind of couldn't really say anything. He was in charge of my grade and passing the course. And so that was tough. What about you?
You just brought to mind, actually, as you were saying that, graduate school. Yes, my actually dissertation chair lady
uh-huh.
had it in for me. And
oh.
I don't mean to sound paranoid, but literally it took her 9 years to finish her dissertation. So she would actually say to me, I would do the research and do my
yeah.
stuff and do the writings. And she'd go, this is great. I love it. And then 1 week later say, I rethought about that. I actually want you to change all of this. So that
no.
it was like jumping through hoops. And I just knew I was never going to win.
To be enough.
To the end where I took the pen in my hand and I went to her house and I said, you are signing off on my dissertation or I am going to the board of the school, the top
Good
of
for
the
you.
School, because this is ridiculous. I have to pay all this extra money because you won't sign off. The
yeah.
best of the people on my chair were happy
to sign.
There's a, I mean, in, and then I did end up having to take it to
the
above committee, and they
uh-huh.
said, you know, this is a great dissertation.
Yeah.
It's short, it's sweet, it's to the point,
right.
and it makes sense. But she couldn't handle
wow.
my being so young when she
yep.
had taken so many years to finish. She was threatened. That was another envy. Envy is
envy.
The root of much maltreatment from people.
That is
when someone
so
envies.
True. Yes.
Negative envy versus positive envy. You know how when you see somebody who has something that you
mm-hmm.
want and you say, wow, I'd like to have that too. Sure. And then you do the work to make that happen. You make that your goal and you use that mm-hmm. other person as an inspiration.
Yes.
Versus destructive envy, which is somebody has something you want, you don't believe that you're able to get.
Yes.
So then you want to spoil it in someone else.
That makes complete sense to me. Yeah. Well, and I think also positive envy you can use as inspiration.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That person has what I want. Okay, here's what I need to do to get there. Versus that negative envy is, oh, it's like that anger and the rage. And, oh, that's really tough.
It's one of the hardest emotions, I think, to battle with somebody, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if somebody has envy and they're unconscious about it, and then they say that that's not what's so, then it's impossible to deal with it. Because you can only deal with what somebody is willing to acknowledge is present.
Sure.
So if you say, you know, I'm not sure where that energy is coming from, and someone says, I don't know what you're talking about, now
right.
you're, you know, up the creek without a paddle.
Yeah, exactly. Up the creek.
Up the creek without right, a paddle. Exactly. Hey, we just want to give you the phone number again, 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And you are listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
I think we should go right into one of our emails.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I've got a couple here. Which one do you want to do?
All right. You want to read email one?
Sure. I know you were talking about relationships again this week, so I had a question. As a child, my dad verbally abused me. I mean, he abused me all throughout my childhood. This was extremely hard to deal with. I had to go to many years of therapy, and I intentionally cut my dad out of my life. Now I'm 36, and he's written me a letter and has apologized. He wants to have me back in his life. I'm not sure what to do. I'll always love my dad because he's my dad, but I'm scared he will repeat the same pattern. Help. That's
very
a tough,
tough
one.
Exactly.
Well, my first thought right off the bat is, what kind of apology did he make? Did he do a sincere, what I would call a remorseful apology?
Yes.
Or just a let me off the hook, I want you in my mm-hmm. life, I'm going to apologize and say whatever.
Exactly, because there's a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of sort of checking it off the box versus really feeling it and feeling regretful.
Right. And a true amends is actually changing one's behavior. It's not the same as just saying, I'm sorry. You know how many times people will say,
yes,
oh, I'm so sorry I did that. And then 2 minutes later, they're doing exactly the same thing because I'm sorry is almost a habitual response mm-hmm. to get somebody off your back about
exactly.
something that they're upset about. Because most people don't like people to be angry with them.
Mm-hmm.
But whether somebody really changes their behavior is a whole other story. I would say proceed with a lot of caution.
Yeah.
You know, don't drop those boundaries right away. Drop those limits or those protective mechanisms, but mm-hmm. really check that out.
Well, and I think it doesn't have to be so black and so white. It doesn't have to be like she has to let him back in or she doesn't. Maybe it can just be a slow, gradual process. And she can, you know, talk to him on the phone one time, see how that goes. If that feels safe and she can tell he's sorry and the patterns are not being repeated, okay, then, you know, maybe you can have a coffee date. And if that goes well, and so maybe it's just starting slow. Slow and kind of checking in and seeing how she's feeling about it.
Look at how funny we both are. So you went to believing this was a woman writing, and I read it thinking it was a guy.
That is really funny.
Isn't that funny? Because when you relook at this, there's mm-hmm. no place in there that identifies the gender.
The pronoun.
Is there?
No.
I don't
I'm
see
saying
any.
That's amazing. But that's funny.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
So I went right for it. Now, I don't know that the advice would be any different whether it's for
a woman or a man.
Yeah, but isn't that fascinating? So
it
we
is
still
really
have so many gender stereotypes,
yes.
even though we try to be conscious of those.
At least we both went, you know, it's, we're safe on
we
both
balanced.
Ends.
Yes.
It's not like we both went for one. That's funny.
Yeah, so I think that's just one where he or she probably needs to be really cautious. Probably write something back first. You know, maybe write something back
like
and say, I have some curiosity about what made you decide to apologize. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for you? Is something going on in your life where you have a change of heart?
Mm-hmm.
I would also want to know from the parent, whether from the dad, whether there was some actual understanding of the verbal abuse in childhood.
Oh, that's a great question. Like understand how much that damaged the child.
Yeah. And what if you... If the father even has any conscientiousness or mm-hmm. consciousness about what that is.
I mean, it is possible for someone to really change and kind of see their part, but it's also possible, like you said, to sort of pass it off and not want to have this cut off, but not really understand the depths of how much he hurt her or him.
You know, I had one of the, probably the most profoundly amazing moment of my life is when I had that talk with my dad, because my dad was a Holocaust survivor.
Yes.
And he went through a lot, obviously. And he didn't talk about it and did not deal with all of that pain inside of him. And so there were moments where he would actually change. He'd become a totally different person. Like, I would look in his eyes and he wasn't my father. He was as if he was post-traumatic stress disorder, dropped into a war zone, and he would start talking to me in a different language. And I would say, Dad. And I mean, he wouldn't come out of it until he was done with whatever he was doing. And he would get into a fight mode and he would say these terrible things. And he was part in English and part in Polish and part in all these other languages. And years down the line, you know, obviously it hurt me a lot because as a child, I couldn't make sense of who he was being or what he was acting out. And in adulthood, we weren't that close. And after my mother died when she was 58 years old, she was very young. He was what I had left, and I wanted a better relationship with my dad. And I sat with him one day, and he just adamantly refused to acknowledge that he had done anything that could have been hurtful to me that way. Because, of course, he was a great dad in so many ways. He was such a beautiful man in so many wonderful ways and really loved me. But I needed to hear from him that his acknowledgement that some of the things that he did really caused me to be very protective of myself when I was around him. And we've had that fight for a long time. And one day he looked at me and he had tears in his eyes and he said, I don't really remember, but if you say that I did, then I believe that I did, and I'm sorry. And I could see in his eyes that he truly was. And I never needed to say it again.
It was just very validating.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the greatest gifts a parent can do to a child, especially an adult child, is to look back and say, you know what? I probably didn't do it perfectly.
Right.
And not hold on with dear life to this idea that, you know, because I meant well, that somehow that was delivered well. Because you know what? We all make mistakes and we're all human. And children want to forgive their parents. They really do. They want to let that go. They want the loving relationship with them. So if you can give that gift to your kid right now, if you're listening and you think, wow, you know, I'll probably, you know, one of those smacks in the head or one of those, you know, words when I said you're a lazy bum on the couch and get up and go do something with your life probably had a pretty negative impact.
Exactly.
Good to speak about that. It's good to just acknowledge that.
Well, and the reverse too, that, you know, if your parent does come to you and apologizes or validate, like, forgive them because they did the best they could, you know, and as a parent now, I see that it's just like, it's hard and there's a lot of stresses and we just try to do the best we can. And I think especially if a parent comes back and says, oh, I'm sorry, or I wish I could have done it differently. And, you know, you gotta forgive.
Is this true for you? Can you remember back on all the times when you weren't a parent and you watched other parents and you would be judgmental? Like, how could they do? Why are they ignoring their child?
I remember I was in an airplane. I was going to a bachelorette party to Miami and I'm all excited for my girls' weekend. And I'm on the plane. There was a child she must have been maybe two at the time. And I swear the plane was probably, 5 hours and 45 minutes, because I was living in L.A. at the time. And the child cried for 5 hours and 44 minutes, almost the entire. And the mom did nothing. And I just remember thinking, what the hell is wrong with this mom? Why can't she shut her child up? And, I had a laundry list of things that, you know, she could have done. And now I realize, sometimes you just can't do anything. You know, the child is crying. I mean, sometimes you can, but a lot of times you can't, you know? God, did I have my judgments? Absolutely.
And she may have grown so desensitized by now. This may be that, that the child just does this. So she probably maybe tuned him out.
It's really possible.
Right?
I do that now too with my kids. So I can relate. I can absolutely relate. You just kind of I'm used to it. It's so true. It's absolutely amazing. And I had all these notes, you know, I'm never going to lie to my kid. And, you know, but of course you have those little fibs, you know, if a child, you know, wants a lollipop, he had the lollipop, you've got another one in your purse and, you know, can I have another one? Oh, sorry, they're all gone. You know, I'm sorry. It's the truth. I mean, that it's just so much easier just to say no and lie about it, a little fib, than, you know, have to deal with, well, you've already had one. It's like, you can't rationalize with a, you know, a little kid.
It sounds perfect. Book title: How Parenthood Makes You Into a Sociopath.
It's so true. Oh my God, I could write that whole book right now. Unbelievable.
Well, we won't call those lies. We'll call them constructive manipulations in order to save the moment.
I like that very much.
And avoid the temper tantrum. Hey, so again, let's give out the number. Sure. Please give us a call at 323-203-0815. You're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we are excited to be with you.
Yeah.
So excited to be talking about all this stuff. You want to go with another email?
Yeah, I was thinking that. Okay.
There we go.
I've struggled with relationships for a long time. Every time I seem to like someone, it's great at the beginning, and then it seems to go downhill. I've been dumped a few times, and it makes me close down a lot. I'm happier when I'm with somebody, but I'm not sure I should make the effort. What do you think? Signed, confused man.
Okay, we know we're
exactly
talking about
we
a man
know it's
now.
A man. Okay. Good.
Okay, guy. Thank you so much
thank
for
you
your email.
For telling us.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I am so pro relationships, and I so believe that we do our best growth in relationships rather than out of relationships. So
yes.
I say get back on the saddle,
absolutely.
But just be a little bit more discriminatory on the front end. You
right.
know, one thing is to become very self-aware of what are you really looking for in a partner, and
yeah.
be honest about that. I know so many people who say, I really want A, B, C, and D, and they mm-hmm. have that, and that's not really what they want. And then they're upset about it. So,
yeah.
you know, if you like somebody and then it goes downhill, why? Why is it going downhill? Did you not pay attention to certain red flags
at
the
that.
Front end?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like I think you just got to pay closer attention to those signs. I think a lot of times we ignore them because we don't want to think that this person has an issue, or we have this fantasy, oh, great, I finally have this partner and things are going to be great. And okay, great. Well, you know, I've seen this sort of red flag, but it's okay. I'll get past it. Or maybe it's just in my head. And so I think we do need to pay closer attention to those red flags at the beginning, because I think that he's saying, you know, it's interesting that he used the word effort, you know, should I make this effort? And I think when you're in relationships, a lot of times it should, in my opinion, it should feel effortless. It should feel, you know, nice to be with the person. And so it's like, if you're feeling like you have to do a lot of work or you've got to go around things, like, I think there's probably some red flags that you're avoiding.
I kind of have the 60-40 rule.
Mm-hmm.
If 60% of it is pretty darn good,
uh-huh.
then it's worth working on the other 40%
uh-huh.
to get a higher percentage of goodness.
That's pretty good. I would probably go even higher. My rule would be like 70 or 80 to 20.
It has to be good.
Yes.
Ooh, you've got a high bar.
I definitely have a high bar. I have a very high bar. So that is kind of.
But if you think about it, in the beginning phases, most people do their best effort mm-hmm. at putting the best of themselves in front of you.
Yeah.
And that's why they say, actually, you know, all the books that say how to get them to say I do in less than 30 days, et cetera, all those kinds of things, they're really a crock. They're really ridiculous because
yeah.
it takes something like 18 months to actually get to know somebody in their truest form.
Yes.
Where you're really seeing the authentic.
The good, the bad.
Yeah,
exactly.
All of it. Because
yeah.
so much of the beginning is about our projections of who we want someone to be because
so
of that strong attraction and all those chemicals in the brain. And
mm-hmm.
so we want to dismiss the things that don't fit that image of the feelings that we have toward that person, which are usually
mm-hmm.
strong attraction, love,
right.
You know, lust,
yes.
desire, et cetera. Uh-huh. And we're seeing ourselves in the mirror of that person's eyes. So as the person
yeah.
looks upon us and is reflecting back our best qualities in ourselves,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like situational narcissism. It's for a moment you almost have been given a drug of delusion
yes.
about
it. It's so true.
So, right? So
yeah.
so I think that there's going to be some effort that one has to make to
mm-hmm.
get a relationship started and to keep it going in a positive way.
Right. Right, right, right. And I hear what you're saying. I guess I just don't – like, I think people confuse, like – in my opinion, effort meaning it's hard and oh my God, that you know, there's just so many issues at the beginning. And I feel like the beginning of the relationship should be the easiest,
yes.
where things flow when there's not that many. Because I mean, God, later down the line, you're going to have so many more complications. It absolutely should be easy in the beginning for sure. Yeah. So
absolutely. But yeah. So I say keep trying. Come
yeah,
on. Just
yeah,
get
exactly.
back out there. But just be a little bit more selective, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it also saves a lot of judgment down the line, too, right? If we're
yes.
not selective and thoughtful about finding a good match for ourselves mm-hmm. at the front end, then we end up finding ourselves being resentful and judgmental yes. and picky about things that we should already have grown to be accepting.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. All right, well, we got another email.
Okay.
Let's read email number 3. I like the emails. Keep them coming. Hosts, my girlfriend said I should listen to your show, so we did that together.
Aww.
I like
that. Isn't that nice?
Cute.
Good guy already.
Exactly. I like him.
We like you.
Yeah. We really love each other, but we seem to have more fights than I think we should. One of the things we fight about is friends and family. I like spending time with my guy friends, and she says I spend too much time with them, and every time I come back from seeing them, I'm different. I ask her what she means, and she can't explain it, so I don't understand. I've heard of the Mars-Venus thing, but I really try to understand what she's saying, but oftentimes it doesn't make any sense to me. Do you have any ideas of things we can try to fight less? So, wow, this is heavy. A lot to say about this.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I think, first of all, this...
Give us your best shot there,
yeah, right,
Coach
exactly.
Kelly.
I think, I mean, friends and family is very typical, I feel like, to fight about in relationships, especially the beginning. And so, yeah, I mean, well, God, I don't even know where to begin. I guess my first thought is that maybe you both can sit down and write out, so you asked the girlfriend what she means and how you're different with spending time with your friends. I think this is really insightful. I think she needs to write it down if she can't explain it verbally, or just maybe she can explain just kind of her feelings when you come back. But sounds like there's just there's not a lot of communication going on and understanding. So I think that's kind of the first step, is just digging a little bit deeper about, you know, what she's upset about, and trying to verbalize it the best that she can. And that way you can understand a little bit more. That would be my first line of defense.
Yeah, and I think adding to that, what is she saying when she says that he spends too much time? So too much time for her liking, too much time in general. Does she have an objective guide that she's looking at that says that this is too much time? You know, sometimes our partners really aren't that different from us. So we might only be a street apart from each other instead of the Grand Canyon. But unless you specify yeah. what that actually is. So I would say the first thing to do is say, well, what would not be too much time
right.
with my guy friends?
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
like maybe what she's saying is it's that extra Sunday night football game after he's already spent the whole day with his friends, and she would like to spend some quiet or cuddly time with him, mm-hmm. you know, at 5:30 on Sundays, and he's off extending that evening. And if he can alternate every other Sunday, or uh-huh. maybe, you know, plan something together, maybe the quality of time that they spend when they're with each other isn't such high quality, and maybe working at what could be better for the two of them when they are together, so mm-hmm. that the time apart would not be so threatening.
Right. That makes sense. But I like the idea too of quantifying that time, because it's true. Maybe in her mind, maybe it's just one activity less mm-hmm. in her mind. And so once you kind of put both ideas together, you may come up with a compromise.
I'd also be really curious what that means that she says that he's different every time
he
comes
what I'm
back.
Saying. I'm
so
very
what,
curious.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
What does that
his
mean?
Friends partying and, you know, Googling at women, and he comes back a different person. I'm very curious too.
And does he have good boundaries or is he heavily influenced by his surrounding
yes.
group? And so maybe he does kind of morph into a person that she's not as fond of.
Yeah.
But she would definitely have to be really specific about
what that means.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious. That was my first thought. Like, what exactly does that mean? But, you know, it's funny about the Mars-Venus thing. I do think there's fundamental differences between men and women where we're just wired differently. And one of the things I always think about that book. So the book is Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And
John Gray, I think.
Yes, exactly. Author. Yeah. And one mm-hmm. of the things he talks about is how men need their cave, their man cave. And so they kind of need a place to have that alone time or just process or do whatever they need to do. And I've completely noticed that with a lot of guys I've dated. They just sort of like need their space to sort of like, you know, gain composure, do what they need to do, and then come back, versus I think women, we just need to kind of like get it out and like, you know, this is what I'm going through, or, you know, have that immediate need to just kind of like, you know, blurt it out. So I have noticed that there's definitely some differences, and I don't know, he's kind of right on, that author.
Yeah, and I would also, I'd probably twist that a little bit from my version in working with so many couples. And
yeah,
I think that a lot of women who are in actively in the career world,
yeah,
and have to do a lot of that sort of make money for survival type of thing, or maybe they're the dominant earner in the family,
yeah,
they actually morph into a little bit more of the male gender stereotype.
Really?
Of the, I mean, I know for myself, I actually need some, probably career-based also, just because of taking on so many people's pain during the day. I actually need to have a reprieve after the day where I just allow my filtering system to kind of... take a deep breath and let some of that go. And I don't want to go right back into relationship at that moment. I actually want some of that separate space. Whereas my guy, Christopher, he misses you. He misses me because he does more independent consulting things.
Exactly.
And so he's not kind of, you know, contained in an office all day long. So, it, you know, I mean, I love what I do so much, but it is, it can be taxing sometimes. Yeah. So needing that. So I don't know. I do believe that there's definitely, I mean, they have done a lot of research. The male and female brain actually is different, but some of the differences I think are cultivated through lifestyle and through temperament also and experiences.
That's very true. God, but that's interesting about the morphing into the male role. I could so see that. Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're you're the one worrying about the paycheck and the mortgage,
you then, have to go into that mode.
Yeah. Then, then, and by necessity from that, having to do that, you know, you need a little bit of a break sometimes.
Sure.
And sometimes that's quiet time or
and it makes sense.
Cave time.
Well, I think it's really important to give yourself that break because I think if you don't and you're kind of forced, you know, you're forcing yourself into another situation you don't really want to be in, it's good for nobody because you're not, you know, you don't, if you don't have enough to give to yourself, you're not going to be able to give to somebody else. So you need to have that quiet time and you need to, you know, take time for you. I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah, me too. Hey, let's go back to that conversation we were having earlier about why some people seem to treat other people better than they treat the people. I was thinking about that, that, you know, that's probably from a, on a pure survival level, there's some value in making sure that the world around you likes you. Or the world around you is, right? Because ultimately, we're all afraid of abandonment. We're all afraid of being alone in the world. And we need people to like us.
Yes.
So you want to expend sometimes that extra energy when you're in the elevator and someone comes in and you make the small talk or you say hello or you do this. You want to make somebody else feel good. And then you kind of deplete yourself and run out of energy later. It's not from bad intention.
Right.
I think there could be some survival value in that.
That's true. But I, but on the opposite end, I've met so many people who could care less about the strangers. They're actually quite mean. So what's that about? I don't know. Maybe they're just, you know, dealing
bitter?
With their own,
bitterness. Yeah. I guess sometimes people have grown to be afraid of other people.
That's
maybe
very
sometimes
true.
I always look at people when they're being nasty as they're doing it for a reason, even though I may not like the reason and it doesn't feel good to be treated badly. Sometimes if you can show compassion to somebody who is in that space, sometimes they'll soften a little bit.
Yes, that is so true. And I always think like it kind of along those same lines, like, God, that person must have had a really either rough day or rough life and just having pity. I mean, I use the word pity, but I like your word compassion, you know, for that person and thinking like, oh my God, you know, because that's how I get through it. Because it's like, if I think of myself in their shoes, it helps me be nicer to them, even if they're not treating me well.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
But, and it's also too, like, notice the people who are not so nice are in the tough professions, you know, the customer service professions, sometimes they can be mean or so. I mean, I think about that if I had to do that job, you know, all the time and I might be bitter too and frustrated having the same complaints or somebody yell at you and things like that.
I had to go to a doctor recently and so I had an appointment and when I made the appointment, for some reason, the receptionist hadn't taken down my phone number.
Okay.
So I guess I was going to be seeing the nurse practitioner. Oh. And so when I showed up, apparently the nurse practitioner had a death in the family, mm-hmm. and she wasn't able to be there. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those days where I was just in a really crappy mood.
Yeah.
And I instantly was angry. Like, I was so upset that I had wasted my Friday morning, which I could have been doing many other things to come there, and that they hadn't called me. And I wasn't very nice to the office staff.
Yes.
So I left the office, and I was feeling very self-righteous mm-hmm. for the moment. And I got down, I walked down the stairs, and I get into the car, and I started to cry.
Aww.
I said, "Why? Oh, my goodness. I was just that person.
Yeah.
I was that person that I would be just not wanting to be." So I actually went, I was very proud of myself. I went back up to the office and I apologized. And I said, "I'm not sure what came over me. I guess it was a stressful appointment. It was something I thought something maybe was wrong." Mm-hmm. And so I was nervous about it to begin with. And I was hopeful that they would actually understand that maybe mm-hmm. I was having a bad day.
Of course.
That I wasn't just this bad,
yes,
vicious person.
Person, of course.
But I felt much better when I had done that. So there was sort of a good lesson, too, that when we do recognize with self-awareness that we have not been so nice to somebody, just go back and say you're sorry.
The same very similar thing happened to me. There was a misunderstanding. I was looking into a preschool for my son, and she was supposed to have him come in a couple days, and then she'd called me and said, "Oh, we can't do it those days." And I was disappointed because I had arranged all my childcare, you know, because of that. And then the next week we were supposed to start, and my husband had spoken to her, and I guess there was a misunderstanding, and he was like, "Oh, Kelly, she can't do it, you know, tomorrow like you planned." And I was like, "What?" And so I left her a voicemail. That was the red flag right there. Never leave your anger on a voicemail or email.
Oh.
And I just was so angry, and it wasn't like me. And I felt so bad because it was like, here she is going to get the voicemail, you know, that day and have this impression of me. And it was just, I just felt so bad. And it was like, here I am thinking like, okay, great, I'm going to show her. And then I felt worse. I felt so bad. So I called her back the next day, and I completely apologized. And she was great. I mean, she totally understood and said, "You know what? We all have those days, and thank you for apologizing." And so I think it's so true. You got to, you know, be accountable and make amends to those we hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I mean, I think a lot of times it's that initial feelings like embarrassment, and maybe you just kind of want to run from it and stick your head in the sand, but you got to take contrary action, and you got to, you know, do what's right.
The two big killers, shame and guilt.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And in small doses, they're helpful because they do keep us humble and they mm-hmm. do keep us accountable. But many people are just deeply paralyzed by an intense level of shame all the time.
Right.
And so shame begets more shame. And what do people do then? Is they either wear it on their sleeve and they're just always putting themselves down, self-deprecation constantly, mm-hmm. or they are they become sarcastic, they become bitter,
yes.
they become defensive, mm-hmm. and because they don't want to face the fact that they have those feelings deep down inside.
Sure.
And so they can. Those are some of the people, I guess, if you're walking around the planet today and somebody's being mean or treating you badly, kind of think twice about that for a second.
Right.
You know, which is what we definitely do want to talk about. What are the options when people mm-hmm. don't treat you well? I mean, there's lots of them.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I mean, the first, when we initially were talking about this, I was thinking like, I mean, I don't know. I'm a big believer in you should be surrounded by the people that you feel the best around and that you feel good and it's positive energy. And I think that if you're with somebody who's constantly treating you poorly, like there's no reason that you should have to suffer with that. So, I mean, my first kind of solution is like, it's okay to not have that person in your life if they're causing you pain and misery.
I always say it's good to do a cost-benefit analysis with friends and people in your life, and even with family, because just because we're born into a certain biological clan mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily mean that we're all going to get along and everything's going to be okay.
Right.
So I think the first piece, if this is at all a meaningful relationship to you, is to talk to the person.
Right.
You know, unless they are, obviously, if somebody's very abusive, then just write them off away, because there's just no.
Right.
If somebody's able to be that abusive, then they don't have the self-awareness anyway to mm-hmm. be able to change, or they would have already.
Yes.
So if you've never heard an apology out of this person, you've mm-hmm. never heard any meaningful words of, "I recognize my behavior sucks," then the chances of that ever changing are nil to none. So why waste any time.
Yes.
Life is too precious. Mm-hmm. Too many moments lost when we spend time with people who can't respect us.
Yes.
Or treat us with some kindness or dignity. But if it's kind of like a on occasion, you know,
sure.
somebody does something, it may be that they may not be aware that that's something that actually bothers you. So I think
yes.
the first thing to do is to just simply say, hey, when I observe you doing blah, blah, mm-hmm. I interpret that to mean blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then I feel angry,
yeah.
sad, scared, etc. And
right.
just having that clear sense of mm-hmm. this is what is for me.
Yes.
Is a really good start. Because most good people will go, wow,
I didn't realize
yeah. that was, oh, you know what? Or, you know, I grew up, sarcasm was the only way that we mm-hmm. dealt with things. So it's so comfortable and natural for me, but
yes.
I can understand that you don't like that. Mm-hmm. Some people thrive on that. I
yes.
mean, like my daughter, I don't know where she got it from, but
she loves sarcasm.
She does.
Yeah.
She just yeah. thrives on it. It's part of her personality.
Sure.
It's fun for her, but mm-hmm. she and I have to have a different communication style because I'm very sensitive to
sarcasm.
To sarcasm.
Yes, so is my husband.
Is he?
Yes. Very sensitive to that. So it's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everybody interprets things differently.
Right. So if you do that analysis and you say, there's, again, that 60-40 rule for me, for you, it's 80,
yeah.
80-20. You are tough. I'm glad I'm still your friend.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you should feel good.
I should feel good.
Yeah, exactly. Got high standards.
There you go. Yeah. So that, I think that's a good one to just kind of.
Oh, I think we got a call.
Oh, wonderful.
All right.
Hello.
Hi, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly.
Who's this?
Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Jeanette.
Thanks
Hello?
For calling.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Jeanette. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
My radio is in the background. Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
Pretty much off topic. I have a cousin who I'm very close to. She seems to be in repeatedly tragic relationships, I should say. They're just not very healthy places to be. And so she has, over time, kind of weaned and waned with who she's close to in the family and who she'll really share anything with. So to start out with, you know, she doesn't really, it's very hard to criticize anything, you know, without fear of being pushed away. In any event, she recently shared some details of her current relationship, and it just sounds really terrible. And I finally came out and said, you know, maybe you should step outside the bubble just to have some perspective. Or, you know, I just tried to be a little bit more mm-hmm. casual in my language besides saying, why aren't you running screaming from this relationship? In any event, she emailed back to myself and another cousin, I love you guys very much, but you telling me to leave is not going to help me leave, and if you don't want me to share with you, I won't. So we're just kind of both like, how can we help her? Did she just want to talk about it? Like, what are things we could say that, without, you know, giving her direct advice or pushing her away, really is the risk there, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have any advice on that front?
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much for calling. My first thought is that if you can try to get yourself out of the mindset that it is your job or anyone else's to enlighten her about her relationship, it'll make it a lot less stressful for you. So kind of taking a deep breath and saying, okay, she is an adult, I'm assuming. Yes, she's
Yeah.
And she's going to have to figure out these life lessons on her own. Sometimes finding some reading material that might be interesting about what it is that you're seeing in this relationship that she has, it might be something she might respond to. Have you ever tried anything like that?
I have, because she's had some very unique relationships in terms of, you know, has been with, she is a lesbian, identifies as a lesbian, has been with, you know, transgender individuals, so always trying to keep on track with,
right.
with, you know, her situation. In any event, I mean, I know in terms of them, they're, you know, both in the group, they're in therapy together, they're in individual therapy, and, you know, all this stuff. She certainly has, I guess on my end, yeah, I've done certain, you know, research in terms of her relationships, but not necessarily, you know,
sure.
how to stay out of this.
Well, the other thing I want to know is, are you able, and this is a question that I think you'd have to think about, are you able to just sort of sit back and listen? Because it sounds like she just wants a sounding board and no advice. And so my question to you is, if you're able to handle that and really, like, just you know, just kind of like suck it up. Because I've had a similar situation where I had a friend where she was constantly cheating on her boyfriend and I couldn't take it. And I just said, listen, I'm so sorry. I can't hear about it. It's too, like, I don't know, it's triggering something in me, and so I just can't hear about it. I will be your friend, and I will hear about every other aspect of your life, but when it comes to relationship, like, I just can't. So I encourage you, if it's like, if it's causing you a lot of pain, to kind of step up and say, hey, you know what, I can't listen, or just sort of listen without commentary, you know, if you can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, honestly, that I've been doing that for 6 months to a year at this point. And it just came down to, you know, she had forwarded the two of us, my other cousin and myself, an email that was just, you know, really, you know, made us concerned for her. So then we both separately responded to her that, you know, we were concerned and that it's really, you know, not to be in that. Anyway, it just came to the point where we felt we, you know, both needed to say something. And I can certainly not say anything except, you know, we're concerned, you know. It's not like we can drive over to her house and pick her up or make her leave or anything. But, you know, how to help someone, I guess, you know, I guess all we can do is listen.
I guess that really is the hard part, is recognizing mm-hmm. where you have control and where you don't have control. And yes. Why sometimes when we love somebody, we so want them to get the insights that we have
yes.
right at our fingertips, and we want to share them.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people just aren't receptive until they are. So I think just continuing to love her and
right.
be there for her should, and you'd be surprised though too. Sometimes all these efforts are valuable, and you don't see them for many years
yes.
down the line.
And
you know,
later, like she may, little, it may click.
Yeah, little pearls yeah. of wisdom you may be tossing her, little seeds that are sticking, but she just isn't ready yet mm-hmm. to take them on.
Right. I agree.
Understood. Okay, well, thank you so much. I just felt like there was something else, and I do appreciate your help.
Thank
well,
you so
she's
much
lucky
for calling.
To have somebody who cares about her
Absolutely.
So much.
Absolutely. You sound super caring.
So thank you for your call. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. And here we are. I guess we have
yes,
to wrap up.
We have to wrap up.
Wow. Okay. Well, we have a couple emails left over, so we can do those next week.
Sure. Exactly.
Yeah. So I want to also, Kelly, what have you got promoting? What are
yes.
you promoting?
So I want to talk quickly. I have my book on Amazon. It's called Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband. And I know you have a couple books as well.
I do. I have four books, actually. They're all on my website at drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com. New website still coming. It's not up yet.
It'll be there.
I'm chomping at the bit, but soon.
Well, join us next week. We're going to talk about liars and cheaters. I'm super excited. It'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, that's so exciting, isn't it? Liars and cheaters.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks again. You were listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
Coach Kelly. Yeah.
Thank
we
you.
We love you. So keep calling us, keep emailing us, and you're the ones who make our show.
We'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.